Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
USDA Friday morning released a bearish report. It looks like Europe is not going to get its act together right away, but there's still a $20,000 land sale in Iowa. Can it all make sense at the same time? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Sterling Liddell of Rabo AgriFinance out of St. Louis, Missouri. Our panelists in studio today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of West Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media on the Land Grant campus of the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Please do visit with me next week if you have the opportunity as I make my way around the state of Illinois with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We'll be at the I Hotel right here in Champaign, just south of the Assembly Hall. On Monday, registration is still open if you'd like to walk in. It's $65 each and every day. We start at roughly 7:45 a.m. at the I Hotel in Champaign on Monday. We'll be at the Farm Bureau Building in DeKalb on Tuesday. Wednesday at the Best Western in Galesburg. And then we'll go south to Mount Vernon to the Holiday Inn and come back to Bloomington to the Doubletree on Friday. Well, let's start our discussion with this question. Greg Johnson, this morning, the United States Department of Agriculture on Friday morning released the latest world agricultural supply and demand estimates. It was just a bit bearish for corn and for soybeans, put the ending stocks numbers roughly back to the same as last year's. What'd you make of that report?
They really didn't change much in the U.S. numbers. Where the big increase came from was in the world numbers, and that was primarily due to China for the corn. I really think corn handled the report pretty well. If the beans wouldn't have been down as much as they were, corn would have probably done all right. And for the week, I think we only finished down a penny. So it seemed like a lot worse week than what it really was. I think this report didn't have a lot of new news in it other than a little bit bigger increase in the foreign wheat and corn stocks. So all in all, pretty much a non-event.
Chuck Shelby, the ending stocks, $848 million for corn, soybeans at $230 million.
Not terribly bearish numbers. I think the market was searching for some good news, and it really wasn't anything positive. But we looked at the market, technically the corn and wheat went down and tested some support, came back at the end of the day, and had a pretty good reversal.
And Pete Manhart.
Yeah, it wasn't really that bad, but I mean, beans did make a new low and then bounced off of it. Wheat wasn't very good either at times, but wheat did go to the plus side at times. Corn really fared well, and the beans stayed down, but not on their lows. I think down the road we're going to look at usage in a better mood. We're going to look at Europe in a better mood. They didn't get anything much accomplished, but it looks like they're on the start of actually getting something accomplished.
December corn this week had a high of $5.93¾. Remember, that's the high for the week, the low for the week in the day trade and overnight at $5.70. The settlement price just a penny lower than last Friday's at $5.85½. How important is it that corn futures make a stand in the 580 area?
I think it's very important, Todd. If you take these lows out that we checked out this week, you're going to open yourself up to a 550 area and basis of March futures. So, again, it was very impressive today. very important to see the market hold, and we need to see that continue.
Greg Johnson from the cash grain side, does basis continue to be strong?
I think the basis has been very strong. It's probably stabilized here for a while. I think the market realizes farmers need to sell a little bit of corn here in December and January to pay some year-end bills. So there's probably going to be pretty good movement, and that's going to keep a lid on basis. But once we get past that Jan-Feb time frame, I think the basis will get extremely, extremely strong again.
Well, did you have good movement this week? I was reported from your Delphi, Indiana, Anderson's facility, there was good movement in some other places. Were you taking in corn?
Yeah, the weather, had a lot to do with that. Free DP had a lot to do with that. Some elevators have free DP, some don't. I think movement does not translate necessarily into selling. We have seen a little bit of selling, this big move down, and then when we get a little bit of a bounce, farmers are using those opportunities to make some catch-up sales. But I wouldn't say by any stretch that we're getting swamped with corn, that movement's really picked up dramatically.
And on Thursday of this week, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures filled in for Dan Zwicker on our closing market reprogram. You can hear that program anytime you'd like, by the way, at willag.org. If you use iTunes, you can actually go back and get the Thursday program and listen to the entirety of this interview, or you can pick it up off our weekend newsletter and just subscribe to willag.org. Of course, I asked him what he thought the most important things happening in the marketplace might be. His suggestion was some reports that were coming up in January. I'd like to play a piece of that interview for you now.
I guess the corn market is probably going to be more in tune to what happens on the stocks and all positions report in January. And the size, ultimate size of the crop. There are a lot of us that simply don't believe the stocks and all positions report in September, which showed that animal feeding for the crop year was down 9.4%, and yet the animals slaughtered was up 1.8%, which never made any sense. In other words, they're somehow mystically learned to gain weight without eating grains. I think it's possible that they end up having to raise that last year's feed consumption 200 million, this year's 300 million, and all of a sudden you've got 500 million off the carryover. So it's an explosive time, depending on what your belief is in that stocks report.
Well, Mr. Bondurant is a guest on this program, usually the first week of April and sometime in October. Well, one of our most popular guests, and I was glad I was able to talk to him Thursday. I was a bit surprised that he took such a bullish stance on a USDA report. I will tell you that I asked Darrell Good this morning about that particular report and whether he thought it would be changed. The answer was, it's highly unlikely, it's an anomaly, and will be just moved through the system. Obviously, John Bondurant doesn't think that's the case. What do you think, Pete?
Well, I think that I agree with John somewhat that those numbers are wrong that they put out there, but those numbers like that have been used for years in the feed in the other category to move up or down, and I think it's something that they've done forever. I just don't think it'll come back that much, but they might raise it a little bit, but I agree that they didn't put in there what's really been used.
I think we watched it all fall as we had very limited ground piles. The ground piles weren't out there. There weren't any lines at any facilities to dump hardly. And you look at that, there was some more farmers' storage probably built. But the bases have been great. And for those factors, we would think the carryout is actually smaller and would agree with that.
And one thing to keep in mind, whether you're bullish or bearish, the average analyst guess going into these quarterly stocks report has been 200 to 300 million bushels off almost every quarter for the last five quarters. So something's going on, and maybe the USDA is right, but look for another wild report when the next quarterly stocks report comes out.
If they fix it, it will be a monumental upside move, right?
Correct.
From these price levels and the big dip we've had.
Yeah, I mean, the move that we had down based on maybe misinformation, I mean, it would be a balloon going off.
All right. Soy complex now. January beans, $11.48.5, the high, the low at $11.25. The settlement price there at $11.07, down 28.75 from the previous week. November at $11.35.25, it was down 20.25. I don't think I gave you the December 12 corn. $5.51.75 was the settlement price. A penny and a half lower on it. Take me through what producers are telling you about new crop sales and whether they're willing and wanting to make new crop sales to you just yet.
Corn or beans, are you?
Both.
Both. I think that when you do the math, if you can assume somewhat of a normal crop, which we haven't had the last 2 years in places, but if you can assume normal, even though corn at 575 isn't as good as what they've had the last couple of years, if you do the pencil, push the pencil, 575 times a normal yield, I think more than adequately pays the bills. And I think we've got farmers that are, you know, lowering their sights. You know, they wanted $6 to $7. I think, you know, now that we're at 550 D's, if we get a 20, 30 cent rally, I think we'll start to see some new crop sales being made.
Does adequately pay their bills mean they're making $100 to $150 an acre instead of what they've been making the last couple of years?
Yeah, and we've made good money the last 2 years, and my point is, let's not give it all back. I mean, you know, let's just maybe hit a single instead of hitting a double or a triple or a home run.
And if you look at last year and the year before, they didn't start selling at 575. They started at four and a half, five. So this, if that's their worst sale, it's a very good sale. So yeah, I've got people interested in selling there too.
I think producers are more concerned this year with maybe higher rent cost, higher cost overall. So they're looking at it more closely and saying, I've got to protect the bottom line. Maybe I don't make as much as I have potentially before, but they're pretty protective, I think, of making sure they make some money and understanding this market is very volatile.
Anything that they ought to do before we get to the brand new year at this point?
I think just keep an eye on the market and have your orders in. I mean, we're not that far from 575, for example. That's only 25 cents, and in these kind of markets, that might be 1 or 2 days.
I think you got to know your numbers. Each producer is going to be different, different parts of the country. You got to know your numbers and be ready to make those sales or do some hedging on paper when you know you can make some money.
Example, we were down 28 on the beans this week. Most of that, all but 2 or 3 cents, was today, was Friday. So, I mean, you can make that up very quickly, and you can do it also in corn. So be ready, and I think farmers are at that place now to be ready to do things.
Greg, you mentioned the fact that the numbers on the global side went up pretty dramatically. Corn crop in China, other areas as well. Will that temper the ability of corn in the United States to maintain current levels or not?
I think so. I think the big increase worldwide was wheat. Australia, Canada, Argentina, those three countries really went up in their wheat. And so what happens is now you can substitute wheat as a feed grain for corn. I think March wheat and March corn are trading roughly at the same level. So, you know, there are bullish, you know, there are certain things out there that only can use corn. But if you get too high of a price, you can start substituting wheat in.
Do we have a trading range everybody's willing to say that we've capped off now, highs and lows?
Yeah, we won't see the $7 corn again. $6.50 on the old crop corn probably would be a high.
I think you have established maybe getting the lower end, but again, I think there's reasons we could see this market get excited again. We forgot about, you know, if China buys, we forgot about where their carryout is. So the rubber band's been stretched pretty far to the downside, so it could go the other way.
And I don't know how believable the China's higher yield numbers are. A lot of private people say they couldn't have grown that big a crop.
A couple of other numbers from the CME Group this week. December live cattle, a high of 122, 12 and a half, a low at 118.25. Settlement price there, down $3.60 at 118.30. January feeders at $142.10. $4.97.5 lower. December lean hogs, $86.40 for the high, the low at $84.75. Settlement price at $85.40. They were down 85 cents. What do you think of the cattle market?
I think the supplies and the numbers are so tight. There's still enough consumers out there that will eat beef. I think it's pretty impressive as we go towards the holiday season here. Typically, beef isn't featured, but I think the numbers are so tight. It's a process that can take many years to rebuild the herds.
And besides that low numbers, we also have huge exports. So both of those things, I think we could be explosive on it.
Do you get the feeling that we've transferred the herd
relatively speaking, to Dakota, Nebraska, parts of Iowa at this point? And what difference does that make?
Well, we were in Ohio and making some travels over there, Todd, and I was surprised. I saw, you know, fences where cows used to be, but we literally saw no cattle in Ohio, and that was pretty shocking to me. No beef cows anyway. So yeah, we're moving the herd to the west, and obviously with crop prices the way they are, it just encourages guys to continue to liquidate in the eastern Corn Belt.
Yeah, and one final question on that sort of issue, but related to ethanol. We'll finish off our credit in January. The mandate is just about where we're at in production. Any reason to think ethanol production in the United States will expand?
Expand, no. I don't know that we'll contract dramatically, but you know, a lot depends on, you know, on margins. Right now, with the expectation is with the credit going away, as long as the mandate stays in place, you know, that we'll still eke out a few cents margin and we'll still use the ethanol.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is the December 9th edition. When we return, we'll talk with Sterling Liddell of Rabo AgriFinance.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. The statewide average temperature so far in December was 35.7 degrees. That's 1.5 degrees above average. The statewide average precipitation was 0.86 inches, which is 0.1 inches above average. Precipitation totals were highest in southern Illinois, where reports of 1 to 3 inches were quite common. A few places in Illinois saw snow in December so far. Amounts were generally an inch or less, and many have noted that we've had a slow start to the snow season in central and northern Illinois. Historically, a slow start is often associated with winters with less snowfall. High pressure will dominate the Midwest this weekend and into early next week. In December, that means clear skies, cold weather, and no precipitation. Saturday will be sunny with temperatures in the upper 20s. Saturday night will be clear with lows in the mid-teens. It'll be a little warmer on Sunday with highs in the mid to upper 30s. Temperatures will moderate at the beginning of the week with highs in the 30s and 40s and lows in the 30s. The 6 to 10 day forecast calls for near normal temperatures and above normal precipitation. In the week leading up to Christmas, the 8 to 14 day forecast calls for above normal temperatures and above normal precipitation. The latest outlook for December calls for near normal temperatures across the state with above normal precipitation south of I-80 and near normal precipitation north of I-80. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm Jim Angel.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the December 9 edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in West Lafayette, Indiana, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Our guest on the phone line today is Sterling Liddell. He is a vice president for Rabo AgriFinance and Rabo Bank International in its Food and Agribusiness Research and Advisory Department. In that role, he's responsible for analyzing the grain and oil seed sectors. By the way, prior to joining Rabo, Mr. Liddell was the Senior Research and Development Analyst with Iowa Farm Bureau Federation. Liddell, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's great to be with you.
Let's start off with this question because, Sterling, you were in Iowa, and they've had a couple of really big land sales recently, $16,000 and more and $20,000 in the last week. Is that a sustainable purchase, do you think?
Well, on the upper end of those purchases, you may run into some difficulty. It depends on what the land's being purchased for. It really comes back to what the average of the land being purchased is. And currently, it's not near that high. It's closer to about $6,500 per acre. Now, this does represent a pretty big increase in the value of land, but at these commodity prices, it's still something that you can cash flow on.
I'd like to ask you what your feeling is on the impact of all this European government uncertainty is on the index funds, the hedge funds. We've seen the funds decrease their length by somewhere as at 1.2 billion bushels of corn down to under a billion, even beans and short wheat. How long does this uncertainty last in Europe? Do you think they can solve this problem in a relatively short period of time? And if not, do the speculators ever come back into the market in the near future?
We're really going into 2012 with a lot of questions on the plate as to what's going to happen in these markets. Europe is right now the most critical of those questions. Are they going to be able to put something together? There was some work done today. We'll have to wait and see what kind of response they get from their population. There's been about a 70% pullback in speculative money since September, I believe, in the markets, really related to some of this uncertainty. At the same time, we've also seen some decrease in the inputs markets and some uncertainty there. Now, what will bring that money back into the markets? We would have to see some stability. We're not estimating that that's going to happen. We're not expecting it to happen in the first part of the year. We're expecting to see development and actually a little stability before we'll see speculative money want to come back into the agri markets.
Looks like in the last month or so, most all the news is bearish out there. Has the market overreacted, or will it react the other way with any little sort of good news?
Well, for the last month, the market really hasn't had anything to trade on except for weather in Europe. We'll have to wait until the January look at stocks and also get to a final yield number to get some bullish news back in the system. Right now, critical to trading is going to be South America, some of those regions in Brazil and Argentina that are technically experiencing La Nina. Outlook is dry for those areas, coming up on some critical soybean periods. So that could potentially bring some bearish news back into the market. But at this point, with Europe still floundering around with nothing solid done at this point, but at least making some direction. And China still hesitating on the imports, at least from the United States and soybeans. It doesn't look like there's a lot of room for bullish news in the next month or so.
How do you think the getting rid of the 51-cent tax credit on ethanol will affect corn, and are we going to produce less ethanol?
At this point, looking at the 51% tax credit, it doesn't look like it will have that much of an effect. With the renewable fuel standard still in place, the anticipation is that we will hold about even somewhere in the 5.1 to 5.2 billion bushel usage of corn in the United States. And so in those terms, the expectation is that we will hold pretty consistent. And then the second part of the question, do we produce more ethanol, really depends on what happens in the macro economy. We do expect to increase the potential for having a second double-dip recession, although a very slight one. We put the European Union falling apart at about a 10 to 15% probability in this next year, so not a very high probability. But if our baseline projections come to pass, our expectation is that oil prices will remain about where they are, if not a little bit down, which would mean that ethanol production wouldn't necessarily expand dramatically, but be about where it is.
Sterling, South America has been a provider of soybeans for export for longer this year than they have in previous years. Is that something you would expect to continue in the future, and can they manage to do that on a year-round basis?
South America has several major issues that are going on with it right now. The first is that they've slowed their land expansion, which averaged about 7% through the first part of the 2000s to about 4% over the last few years. So it indicates that there's a reduction in the ability to expand land. For that reason, they have actually slowed their rate of growth in terms of production and are looking to increase their ability to produce or their techniques of producing. The anticipation is that they will continue to increase their crop production as their infrastructure becomes more developed, and especially as their storage system becomes more developed. We should anticipate them having grain available for more of the year than they have in the past.
Can I follow up on the other side of the world and what your view of Ukraine and some of the former Soviet republics might be and their ability to produce corn, wheat, maybe even oilseeds might be?
Ukraine is, and the former Soviet Union, so the Black Seas area, Russia, Ukraine, and Kazakhstan in particular, represent one of the biggest risks that we see going into this year. In the past, they've grown their ability to produce all of the commodities. They've gone from about 13% average of the world trade in early 2000s to 26%, 22% over the last four-year average, but 26% in 2009. So they're rapidly developing their ability to grow. The problem is, as they become more of a grower and more a part of the world trade, they're also very volatile, both politically and production-wise. And so that enters a lot of unsurety into the equation. They can produce corn. They can produce corn at very good rates. They can produce wheat at higher rates than they have in the past. And as they produce more and become more part of the world trade, this will just mean a lot more volatility.
Sterling, I want to follow up with one of Todd's earlier questions about land values. Where the population keeps going higher and higher, more demand. Farmers don't seem to be overextended like they were in the 70s. But on the other hand, we've seen land values increase almost every year for the last 20 years. In the last couple years, some of those years, double-digit increases almost. Can we hang in here at land values like this, or are we setting ourselves up for a correction?
Well, there's a lot of discussion going on in the market right now about land values and what that means. Differences between now and the late 80s when we had the farm crisis, farmers are not as extended in leverage or debt as they were at that period of time. In fact, the debt-to-equity ratio is better than it has been since USDA started keeping track of the global or the national balance sheet. Farmers have utilized a lot of cash to purchase this property. In the last 5 years, agriculture has been the one shining investment in the economy, and so there's been no reason for farmers to go anywhere else. At the same time, interest rates have remained low and capital has been very inexpensive. And these are all the drivers of this land value increase. Fundamentally, it's very strong. Now, just to follow that up, if you were to say, can this be sustained, it depends on what happens with interest rates and commodity prices.
Sterling, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you very much.
Sterling Adell is a vice president for Rabo AgriFinance. Our thanks to him and to our panelist in studio, Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in West Lafayette, Indiana. You can always hear this program again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great week.